from LPM.
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Well, hello, everyone. It's good to be back. My name is Alona, and this is Money Memories. This week's guest is Oliver Tweddle. Oliver, or Ollie, as he's referred to by his friends, discovered he had a talent for sailing while growing up in Australia and dedicated his life to pursuing the Olympic dream. Along the way, he learned firsthand the challenges of managing athletic ambition with planning for the future. He shares the financial lessons he's learned along the way and how being an amateur athlete is similar to running a small business. Also, a quick reminder for you listeners out there to please drop a review on Apple Podcasts if you enjoy the show. Now, let's jump in. Great. Well, welcome, Ollie, to Money Memories. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks for having me here.
I'm so excited to speak with you. So I don't know how many of your followers know this, but you are actually a competitive sailor. And I was wondering, how old were you when you first started sailing?
So I started sailing when I was about 4 years. So pretty young. My parents put me in a boat. It was in a very safe environment. Like they had a nice big long rope tied to the end of the boat. So if I got into trouble, they just pulled me back in. But it was, started very young and really just enjoyed having the ability to, I guess, steer my own vehicle.
Do you still sail in your spare time, or is that something you have time for now?
No, I love the sport, and it's a great sport. You can do pretty much up to any age. So I still sail on weekends or go out in the evenings with some friends on their boats. So yeah, do it for a lot of fun still.
Awesome. And also, we have to explain your accent. So where are you from? Where did you grow up?
My accent, I think, is a hybrid from the English and Australian one. So I grew up and born in the UK, lived there for about 15 years. And then my family immigrated to Australia, where I've spent the next 15 years living here. So it's probably a hybrid of the two.
Very cool. So with that kind of context in mind, what's your earliest or most impactful money memory?
I think my earliest memory was actually when I was about 7 or 8, and I wanted to get more into sailing, and I wanted to get a boat of my own. And, you know, it's a reasonably expensive sport when you're looking at buying boats. And so my parents, instead of buying one, my dad actually went and built me one. So it was instilled in me, you know, like, okay, well, if that's the actual price it is there a way to do it yourself, you know, cheaper? And he was able to build a wooden boat for me, which I had for many years and really enjoyed. So for me, that was kind of, you know, the first insight into, just because that's not the price of something, it doesn't mean that that's necessarily what you should pay. You can potentially do something yourself to get it cheaper, or even sometimes get a higher quality product.
Wow, that's incredible. So have you taken that DIY philosophy with you into adulthood? Like, are you a big DIYer?
I like to, if I can. Yeah, I'll always try and weigh up the opportunity costs. Like if it's something that I'm not going to be very good at, it's probably best if I then just pay someone with more experience to do it. But if it's something I feel like I've got the time and I can do and make a good job of it, then I'll have a crack at it for sure.
Wow, that's amazing. So sports and finances, those are two things that we don't always assume is going hand in hand supernaturally. And I'm imagining for you in the life of kind of like a competitive athlete, like was most of your childhood/early adulthood spent just like singularly focused on training, or were you able to incorporate different interests along the way to kind of help you transition out of, you know, competitive sports as, you know, as you eventually aged out?
Yeah, I think, for most athletes, like, you do have that singular focus on the goal that you're trying to achieve. I was quite fortunate in that quite a few of the support network I had made it very clear that, you know, especially in our sport, it's not like a NBA or American football where, you make millions being at the level that I was in the sport that I was in. This wasn't a sport where you'd make much money from that. So it was very clear that you had to have a backup plan and have a degree and have all this other extracurricular, I guess, skill sets. So there was I was doing a lot of that stuff on the side so that when the time did come, obviously every athlete, you know, you dream of not retiring until way, way down the future, but sometimes it happens through injury or through other things or just life. So I made sure that I had a backup plan in regards to my degree and my passion of investing in finance. So that was kind of how I was then able to transition out.
And when did you start to cultivate that passion for finance and investing?
I think around about 5 or 6 years ago, you know, when you're doing like Olympic campaigning, especially, there's not much money in the sport, and you have to figure out ways to raise funds yourself or work and get the money to basically put every dollar into it. So it's not a good financial move from all the advice that we give, but it is like you're chasing your passion. And so from there, I got really interested in looking at ways to get extra money, and investing was obviously one of the ones that popped up when you searched on Google. And I started to do a lot more research on that, and that was when I really got interested in starting to put some money aside and invest in it for my future.
Got it. So what's the worst money you've ever spent?
That's a very interesting question. Like, try not to live, I guess, with any regrets in that. Like, if I spent the money on something, I would have made a conscious decision for it, and it's probably helped, I guess, guide my path to where I am today. But I would say if you look at it from a pure financial point of view, probably when I bought one of the PlayStations when they first came out, you know, they were overpriced and quite expensive. I could have waited a couple more months and they'd been a bit cheaper and not had as many issues with them. So from that point of view, well, I did have a lot of fun playing with my mates on it. So it's, you know, that would probably be the one, I'd say.
And I'm always curious, like, because I've always spent my entire career has been like in the corporate world, like working at quote unquote 9 to 5. So whenever I meet with people who haven't had that as like their entire experience, I'm always curious, like, how are you managing your money or managing your finances before entering like into the corporate life while training as an athlete?
I think for an athlete, right, most of the money that you have pretty much goes towards your campaign, like your campaign or your sport, plus whatever's left over is living. And the way our money was in like the Olympic level sports is you kind of would get funding after, like you'd get money after you'd spent it, so you'd get reimbursed. So it'd be a lot of like that feast and famine style budget that you'd have to do. Like, it wouldn't be a regular paycheck that you'd get monthly. It'd be every now and then you'd get money or from sponsors or from other work that you did. So personally, I always try to use a feast and famine budget. So make sure that when I got paid large lump sums of money, that I could make it stretch for another 5 or 6 months because you weren't sure when the next one would come. But there would be other athletes that were in different sports that would be on a more monthly type thing. And so I think it definitely would depend on the situation you're in. But in my sport and for me, it was kind of like that feast and famine style budget that I really tried to focus on to manage the money so that so that I could afford to leave and still do everything I needed to within the campaign. But it was not enough money left over to actually start investing in the future.
Did you ever make any like oopsies in your feast and famine budget where you thought it was last 5 months and then actually lasted like 2 or 3?
I mean, it always happens, you know, certain things pop up where then you had some work lined up and then it didn't come through and then you'd fall a little bit. So, but I was quite fortunate enough that I was still able to have a little emergency fund set away. So from a youngish age, I was like, okay, well, if I don't have enough money and something was to happen, I'd need a little bit left over. And that's now just with a full-time job and stuff. That's just, I've built that emergency fund up to where I need it to be. And now I know that that's going to be covered for 6 months, you know, so that's all good.
Yeah. I think that's incredible. Cause I feel like sometimes people who don't have like this like stable paychecks, let's say, and who are more like in freelancers or in the feast and famine mode, it can be quite challenging to think about like financial planning and budgeting. So from your personal experience, what were some like resources or things that helped you kind of be more disciplined when you were doing that?
I think probably one of the innate skills that you learn when you're an athlete and you're running and managing your own campaign is that we would have to run it like a business. You know, you would have to put a budget out for the entire year and plan your cash flow around that. So when you would expect jobs to come in and money to come in, and then you'd have to then look at all the expenses. So really it was more around just cash flow budgeting. So like actually knowing how much was going in, like in 3 months' time versus how much was going to go out and if there was going to be a shortfall. So I would say if you do live on a feast and famine budget, you should pay a lot of attention towards your actual monthly cash flow. And that was kind of just it, like running as a business, and that was how I could kind of try and manage it so you'd have enough throughout the whole year to try and avoid any issues of running out of that cash flow.
Wow, awesome. And I love how you're able to parlay some of your learnings like from being an athlete into managing personal finances. So can you talk a little bit more about your transition from being an athlete into now working like in the financial services sector? What is the thing that maybe that's most surprised you about working in financial services versus managing your own personal finances?
So for me, that's probably one of the biggest things that I've taken away from it. There's this, a really high standard of ensuring that the advice given or the information or the education around it is very accurate, and also that there's, you know, that you're doing the right thing by the person that you're trying to help on the money that you're trying to manage. Whereas when you're doing it yourself, like some people, you know, may approach it differently, but I don't mind experimenting with a few things with my own money just to try and see how it works, like kind of like learn on myself before doing to others. But yeah, that's probably what I've observed in the financial industry, that there's a lot of structure and rules and regulations around that, which is great for the people, you know, for the industry as well.
Yeah. And then are there any, what's like some of the best financial advice or investment principles that you've received that you follow?
For me, it's definitely the pay yourself first. So whether that's your future self or your current self, and future self through your retirement account, whichever country that is in. And then if it's your present self, trying to invest in, I guess, the most tax advantaged mechanism that you can. And then just, yeah, basically enabling enough money in your per paycheck to just invest so that in the future you're going to have some money, whether it's through your retirement account or just in 10, 15 years time, that you can then just access whenever you want, just trying to look after your future self before your present self. That's kind of probably the ethos I try and live by.
Nice. Listening to you speak, I'm just struck by, I'm like, wow, are all Australians just like super financially literate, or did I just like meet the most financially literate one? So question for you is like, how do you think that most of your country mates have a basic understanding of financial literacy that you think like allows them to make good decisions, or are you kind of like the exception, not the rule?
Oh, look, I think there's a couple of people that have been doing really great things to try and increase the financial awareness. We have a great book here called The Barefoot Investor, and it was a guy who's a former financial advisor that wanted to try and help Australians, you know, be better with their finances. And one of his biggest gripes was that there wasn't enough education around this at schools, which is what it's like in most countries. And I think I read a stat the other day that has about 50% of Australians living paycheck to paycheck. So very similar stats to in America. So based on that, I would say half the population is on top of it and half needs the ability to have more, I guess, awareness around this. And that's kind of why I launched my channels, to try and increase that awareness and just try and help people, provide people with information they may not have known or been able to find previously.
Oh, that's amazing. What are some kind of like financial misconceptions that you often hear people talk, like you often hear referenced, that really annoy you?
Yeah, probably the first one is that investing in the stock market is gambling. That one is just, there's just no facts to it whatsoever that it's gambling, but that one probably really annoys me. And it's also annoying because it's widely accepted by most people that aren't educated or don't know. And it's like, you know, if we can provide some education, then they'll see how much it's not like gambling. The other is that you have to be rich to start investing, with all these brokerage accounts that open up now with, you know, no commissions on trading, and you can buy fractional shares. Like, you can get started investing with just $1 or $2. So again, that's another myth that I really, really don't like, and think, you know, like, there's not a reason to not invest. So they're probably the two biggest ones that get me. And, you know, because they are believed quite a lot by a lot of people, and they're, you know, they're just not true.
speak that wisdom, speak it into the universe. Before I let you go, I did ask you what your worst purchase that you ever made was. So it wouldn't be fair to leave you without asking what your best purchase you've ever made was.
Best purchase I ever made. I would say probably the purchase in, I guess, the time, money and effort and energy that I put into the sport of sailing. You know, it's afforded me many opportunities throughout my life. I've got to travel around the world and do the sport that I love and meet a lot of people. I met my partner through that as well. So it's, I would say probably the purchase of my time and effort in that, or even just the first boat that I bought. Yeah, that would be probably the best investment or purchase that I've ever made.
That's beautiful. What's your favorite place you ever gotten to travel to through sailing?
Oh, I've been to a lot of cool places, but my favorite place to sail is this lake called Lake Garda in Italy. It's truly amazing. So it's most sailors' favorite place to go, just because the sailing there is amazing and the backdrop's cool and there's so many other things you can do there. But that's really cool. And then I really enjoyed my time when I went to Miami as well. That was probably my next favorite place that I got to go from sailing. So
awesome. Before I let you go, if people are interested in connecting with you and learning more about you, where should they go?
So you can go to my Instagram at minted_millennials, or check out my blog at mintedmillennials.com.
Thanks so much for tuning in. As always, I'm your host, Ilona. If you like what you heard, please be sure to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. For more episodes, check out funnymemoriespodcast.com or listen to the show anywhere you listen to podcasts. Interested in being featured on the show? Head to the website and submit a note or DM me on Twitter @IlonaOnTheMoney. See you next week.